Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, my guests are a couple of my heroes, Joe and Terry Graydon, who live with us here on the border between Chapel Hill and Durham. Orange County residents, Joe and Terry are known throughout the country as a result of their newspaper column, their public radio broadcast program, which is a weekly event, and also because of numerous writing books that you've written, including Joe and Terry, maybe not brand new, but new, Favorite Home Remedies, which is available on your website, peoplespharmacy.com. So welcome, Joe and Terry.
Nice to be
Thank
with you.
Thank you, D.G.
Tell us, first of all, about the new book.
Well, it was an idea that kind of hit me. One of those, maybe it was a shower idea, or maybe it was in a dream. I don't know where these ideas come from.
He gets some of the best ideas in the shower.
But we realized that the fall fundraiser was coming up for WUNC, and we didn't have a premium.
You got to have a premium when you're raising money.
You really do. And it was like, well, Terry, what are we going to do? And she had that blank look on her face every once in a while. I was like, I don't know. I was like, well, what if we created a premium just for public radio? And what if we compiled our favorite home remedies? Because, you know, people love this stuff. So that's what we did. From idea to printed books was what, Terry?
It was a little more than 6 weeks.
My golly. You had a stock of questions and answers that you'd
Well, we do. In fact, if you go to our website, you will find an enormous treasure trove of home remedies that people have shared with us. And that's really where most of these come from, or they come from people who have written in to the newspaper column, or they come from people who've called in on the radio show. But a lot of them have been posted on the website.
So you got this massive collection of information, and the challenge. Now, most of us who aspire to write books, we just got this idea that we want to do a book, and then we got to either go do the research or we got to sit down and write the story. You had the information surrounded. You had to sort it out and put it in the book. So maybe it's not as startling as it sounds to get it done.
Well, it was pretty startling because we really, you know, what they call this in the publishing business, we crashed this book. So we all worked on it really hard for 6 to 8 weeks.
Well, now, other than the two of you, who's your team?
It included our son in this particular instance.
Dave Graydon came to our rescue using InDesign, which is a kind of a program in the Macintosh world for assembly and creativity.
So, David, you've got the content. Dave's got the skill to put it into a readable and a visually workable format. It was
exactly.
Something that most of us don't have.
Right. We were very fortunate. He is also our sound editor, and we'll talk a little later about, you know, how editing is so important to our radio show these days, which was not always the case. But he has many skills, and so we said, Dave, we need your help, and he did it.
Right. And he actually used a design that Keith Cassell, the designer in Durham, had developed for us.
Right. So we got a designer to kind of lay out the book and create the cover, and then Dave implemented the process. And we wrote little introductions for each of our, if you want to call them chapters or sections, whether it's arthritis or acne or dandruff or constipation or diarrhea or whatever, so that people had some context. And then we pulled together our favorite home remedies for the last several years.
Well, what y'all are experts on drugs, in terms of medicines.
Yeah, careful how you say that.
Yeah. I'm sorry, medical drugs.
People get all kinds of they're drug experts.
What's the best? You say medical drug or treat or what do you? What do you say? Avoid the ambiguity.
You know, as a pharmacologist.
I started
studying how drugs work, why they work. You know, benefits, risks, pluses and minuses. You know, ever since graduate school and even before that. And then Terry came along and brought the medical anthropology perspective, which adds a whole nother dimension.
Well, it's really how people think about them, how they use them, because, you know, what the drug does in the test tube or what it does in a clinical trial, it can be quite different depending on how people actually use it.
What are the differences and the respective advantages and disadvantages to home remedies versus the prescription drugs that you generally
that's a wonderful
she's raised her hand.
It's a wonderful question, and you know, Terry, that contact we got from the podiatrist in LA really brings it into focus.
The main advantage from home remedies is that they are not expensive. And the second advantage is that they're not dangerous.
We got an email from an outraged podiatrist in L.A. several years ago because he'd been reading in the Los Angeles Times our home remedies for nail fungus. And he said, sort of, how dare you? I mean, what is wrong with you people? There are FDA-approved treatments, and I waste so much time every day explaining to people why these darn home remedies that you recommend don't work.
You know, people come in and their feet smell like Vicks VapoRub or like vinegar, like salad, what have you. And he said, and they just don't work. Well, we ran his comment in our newspaper column and we got such a response. People said he just only sees the people for whom home remedies don't work. The ones for whom they work don't go to him.
Oh, well.
And they're expensive. You know, these drugs are, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dollars, in some cases over $1,000 for nail fungus. Not exactly a life-threatening condition, but some of the drugs can have life-threatening side effects. So the difference is that he's right. Drugs are approved by the Food and Drug Administration. They have to undergo what they call randomized clinical trials, double-blind placebo-controlled trials, and home remedies are almost never tested. But what most people forget is that prescription drugs and over-the-counter remedies are not all that effective most of the time, even though they're approved by the FDA. In other words, an antidepressant like Prozac may work 55 to 60% of the people who take it, but a placebo often works about 45 to 50%. So the difference between an inactive sugar pill and the active drug is very, very small.
What about the effectiveness of drugs for nail fungus?
Well, and they're even less effective. I mean, that's the thing that's so astonishing. You can take these drugs for months and months and months, and about 30, 40% of the people will actually see their nail fungus go away for a while, but it often comes back.
All right, now, you're talking like that home remedies
They're not more effective. We are not going to say home remedies are more effective. We couldn't possibly say that. It's probably not true, for the first thing. And for the second thing, nobody's done the research to actually find out how effective they may or may not be. I doubt they're more effective than the prescription drugs, but they are a lot less expensive. And if we're talking about something like soaking your toenails in a vinegar Listerine solution, we're not talking about life-threatening side effects.
Right. And I think the other point is that if you follow our motto, which we use on the radio and our newspaper column and in our books, if it might help and it won't hurt and it's affordable, then we'll talk about it.
We'll talk about it. But in your new book, Favorite Home Remedies from the People's Pharmacy, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're pretty enthusiastic about these home remedies, but there's no warranty going with it, isn't
it? No, and there's no warranty with prescription drugs either. I mean, I think that's the point. In other words, if your doctor writes you a prescription for, let's say, Requip, which is a drug for restless leg syndrome, RLS, you've seen the commercials on TV, there is no guarantee that drug is going to work. And oh, by the way, there is a side effect. You may fall asleep during the day while you're driving. Now, that's a pretty scary side effect. Oh, and yeah, and by the way, it's a pretty pricey pill. Now, what we're suggesting for restless legs
is ridiculous.
It's silly. It's the old bar of soap under the bottom sheet trick. And so can we tell you how it works, why it works? No. And if it doesn't work, you're out a bar of soap.
Well, would you argue that physicians who are trained to prescribe prescription drugs as a part of their overall medical practice should examine the home remedies that have worked for some people and put that on their list of suggestions or prescriptions to their patients in some cases?
Some doctors do that already, and I would want to do that if I were a physician. On the other hand, sometimes doctors they may not know about the home remedy. They may not think about it. They may be thinking in terms of this is what, you know, this is the standard of care.
Well, I mean, keep in mind that right now we're in an economic crisis. And so whether it's somebody with insurance or even somebody who doesn't have insurance, our approach is, look, if it's a minor condition, if it's not life-threatening, why not try a home remedy first? We got an email 2 days ago from a doctor who said, I don't believe this. I'm a scientist. I like data. But I've been waking up in the middle of the night with these terrible leg cramps. So I thought I'd try your silly soap under the sheet approach. I can't explain it. It worked. It's amazing. And he was very enthusiastic. So, you know, if I'm a physician and I'm trying to prescribe something for a patient who's complaining about nighttime leg cramps, which can be a very bothersome and very painful condition, which can also affect your sleep, I don't have any arrows in my quiver. I do not have a prescription drug that has been approved by the Food and Drug Administration for nighttime leg cramps. I used to be able to prescribe quinine. But that's been taken away from me. The FDA says it's too dangerous, doctor. You cannot do that anymore. So if I don't have a prescription drug, why not suggest something as silly as a bar of soap under the bottom sheet or a teaspoonful of yellow mustard or maybe a little quinine, which is in tonic water and presumably for most people is safe if you're not allergic to it. And we, you know, probably have half a dozen other home remedies for leg cramps. So that's the kind of thing where we think a home remedy is cool.
So go ahead, Terry.
Go ahead.
Well, my question continues to be is, should home remedies and the application of them in these kinds of circumstances be a part of the education of a family physician who's practicing in our country today?
You know, I would think so.
I think that it will be a very cold day in hell before that happens. I mean, you know, if I were at a medical school and I were training medical students, I would have a very hard time wrapping my head around home remedies. The thing that I wish medical schools would do better and continuing education would be more effective, and that is teaching physicians how ineffective the drugs they're prescribing really are.
The drugs have some problems, too.
And that even though something is quote-unquote approved by the FDA does not necessarily make it really safe or really effective.
Well, I'll tell you what, Joe and Terry, let's take a break. Joe and Terry Graydon are my guests. I got them here because I want to learn how they do their radio program and selfishly to share for my purposes so I can do this program better for you, and maybe you'll be curious as I am. But it's so much fun to talk about their work. We'll do some of that when we get back, and we'll also learn about their radio program after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guests are Joe Graydon and Terry Graydon. They're part of our community here in Chapel Hill in Orange County, and they're famous. They represent us all over the country and, in fact, all over the world through their newspaper column, their public radio program, and through their many contributions through their books. And we've been talking about their latest book, which is Favorite Home Remedies. You can find out how you get that book by going to their webpage, peoplespharmacy.com, and we'll have a link to that on our webpage when we post this program. But, guys, I'm so impressed when I listen to your radio program because it flows smoothly. Of course, you guys have developed the wonderful relationship that you guys have in commenting on each other's and giving really two perspectives on the same problem as well. But tell us about when you get up, I assume, on Saturday morning. Do you do this on Saturday morning? It sounds like it's live on Saturday morning to do your radio program. What part of it's live and what part of it have you been working all week to put together?
Well, if you go back to when the show started, which is early, basically 1980, 1980, 1980, 1981 would have probably been the first hour-long show heard on WUNC, it was live. And it remained live exclusively up until just a year or two ago. Every once in a while, we record an interview if we want to go on vacation. But we would get up, and still do, 5:30 on Saturday mornings. And, you know, drag our bones out of bed and head over and do a live show, either with a guest in studio, which is kind of rare because it's hard to get people to come to the studio that early, or on a telephone, more recently on what's called an ISDN line, which is out of another radio
studio
station.
Studio to studio type.
Exactly.
Studio to studio. And that produces the best sound quality. So it sounds as though the person is right in our studio.
So we've been doing that for a very long time, but a couple of years ago, we started introducing recorded interviews. So we will record, sometimes it'll be one guest or two guests for a full hour, and then we'll edit them down. So it'll actually be perhaps an hour and a half of sound that ends up being about 40, 45 minutes, which allows you to have a very high quality interview. We initially resisted this concept because we just like live, and you know, live is what it is. You make mistakes, you got warts, you show them. When you edit,
it comes across differently.
It's very different. Yeah. You edit out the warts, it sounds better, but it's not quite as spontaneous. But Terry Gross, for example, very popular host on public radio, records all her interviews and edits them. Not she, of course, but her producers edit them and edit them and then edit them some more until they are just really perfect. And so we took a page from her playbook. We also now integrate both live and recorded interviews. So on some of our live shows, our Health News Update shows, we might have one or two interviews that we've pre-recorded, which we'll drop in, and then we'll open up the phone lines to people to share their experiences as well, which is what we did just last week.
And another thing that we do occasionally in our live shows is we may have a caller who has called us earlier, and perhaps somebody who's in California or someplace else that, you know, doesn't hear us at 7 a.m. Eastern time.
Although in Chapel Hill, we're hearing the program as live.
Yes,
that
you're
in
hearing,
many regions, particularly out west, it would be impossible for it to be, or not impossible.
Not but impossible, it would, but not desirable.
Yeah. Well, we have listeners, for example, in Dallas-Fort Worth on one of the strong NPR affiliate stations, KERA, they join us live at 6 a.m. So that's the early birds. And we also have live listeners in South Dakota and North Dakota. It's pretty hard
to
get.
These are the farmers. These are definitely
the early
up
birds.
Early.
And you can't expect the folks out in California to be up at 4:15, 4:30, nor can you expect the people in Alaska to be joining you live. So if we want to get their voices, those listeners, on the air, we have to record them at some other time. I think a lot of people are shocked when they hear, for example, that Car Talk is not a live show. They record it, I think it's on Tuesdays. And then they often run it on Saturdays, which is when most public radio stations will air the show. And it sounds live, but in fact, it's been pre-recorded.
People have called in because, of course, the guys say, well, if you've got a question about your car, you want to talk about, you know, whatever.
Carburetors.
You know, carburetors or your boyfriend and the way he drives. Call us, and they give the telephone number, and people call right then because it sounds like a live show. And people call in, and they leave their question on the voicemail, essentially, and they have one person. I'm forgetting the person's name, but you've heard the credits on the Car Guys show if you listen. And she calls them back, listens to see whether or not these folks can talk and if they have an interesting story to tell, and then she lines them up. She calls those people on a Wednesday, so they are talking to the Car Guys as though it's a live show, but she has actually called them and organized that.
So the Car Guys come in on Wednesday and handle and record the calls that are going to sound spontaneously.
And they actually do that as though it were a live show for them.
Uh-huh. Now, how do you all do it? Because I feel like I can call you during the show and get
online. You can.
And you can. You know, if you can get through the queue. I mean, what is very clear in talk radio, as I'm sure you're well aware, is only a tiny, tiny fraction of the folks who call in are ever going to actually be put on the air just because the phone lines get jammed. I mean, when we open our phone lines, the lights light up. And you know, so very few people are actually going to get
through. It's a lottery sort of in terms
of... it is. I mean, the folks locally are get a little advantage because of the nature of the way the phone system works. So if you're calling from Chapel Hill, Raleigh, Durham, you know, someplace in North Carolina, you are much more likely to get in than if you're calling from Dallas or Wisconsin or from South Carolina. It's just because of the feeder trunks and the way those lines work.
Joe always says that, but I'm not sure he knows that for sure.
Well, you can't prove that he's wrong.
Oh, no, I can't prove he's wrong, and I wouldn't even try.
But there's a good chance, yeah, that you could get through. We also are going to integrate into the show some of the calls from California or Wisconsin who may have recorded last week or 3 weeks ago. And if they've got, for example, a really wonderful home remedy to share, we're going to want to make sure it gets on the air. And so we'll integrate those with the live calls.
Well, can you give us a tip? Is there a way to get on to increase the chances? Can I call outside of the time period and leave
absolutely.
A message?
Absolutely. You can go to our website and just leave a message that, you know, if it's an interesting story. I mean, you know, let's be real honest. Radio is about stories. And I think that's where a lot of people don't understand why Car Talk is so successful. It's not a show about auto mechanics. If it were, it would have failed a long time ago. The reason Car Talk is so wonderful is because people tell great stories and there's really cool interaction between the hosts and that person. And so the reason that we like to think that People's Pharmacy can create driveway moments, as it's referred to in the biz, is that if a caller has a really great story to share, that's what's going to keep you
so
in the car.
So if I want, again, this is just great stuff for me, but if I want to get on your show, then the best way to do it, well, one way to do it is to call and work my way in during the live, the live show, and maybe I'll get on. But if I really want to get on, and if I've got a great story, maybe to write in through the webpage and tell that story, and then that catches your attention. And you, what you'll say is, if that person can tell the story on the air as well as he or she has told it in the email.
Right. Now, we also have voice.
That's a big if, yes.
Yeah, we also have voicemail. And so if someone were to call our toll-free number and leave their message. And what is that toll-free number, which I screwed up really royally last week on air?
That number is 888-472-3366.
And so if we hear a really phenomenal message, you know, we're going to be very interested, and we're going to have our producer make that call and say, you know, let's get that person on the air. For example, we had a woman contact us several years ago who talked about cabbage leaves on her breasts. You know, that's going to get your attention. She had swollen breasts as a result of breastfeeding, and for some reason...
Although she had been planning to breastfeed, she had to cut it short.
Right.
And she had engorged breasts, which are very painful. And the midwife suggested cabbage leaves. So she put these cabbage leaves inside her bra. That's an interesting
story. She was able to tell that story, and that's a driveway moment. When
it's an absolutely driveway moment. We had on the air just last week a man from Raleigh, Martin, who shared a story about his mother with what was presumed Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, a great
it
story.
Had come on suddenly 4 years earlier, but she'd remained stable for 4 years. And he had to go back and forth from Raleigh to D.C. to take care of his folks. His dad had had a heart attack. And because of the stress and because things were a little bit complicated, he would occasionally forget her medicine, one pill of which was Simvastatin or Zocor for her cholesterol control. And he always noticed the day after he forgot the Simvastatin, her memory improved. This began to puzzle him, and eventually he decided on his own initiative. He did talk to the doctor about it. The doctor wasn't too thrilled, but he said, you know, Mom is not doing well. What the heck? I'm going to stop the Simvastatin. And she got better, dramatically better, and her memory returned.
Yeah, this is a great story, and I remember hearing this. Because I said, hey, whoa, you shouldn't do this without having some doctor sign off on this. And he said, I had the medical power of attorney to do this, and
this gets to the whole issue of quality of life. You know, we on occasion have heard from someone who says, you know, my elderly mother, aunt, whatever, is in the nursing home. She is in terrible shape, you know, late 80s, early 90s. The quality of her life is just zero. And her memory is gone, or there's some kind of mental problem. And I just decided, that's it. Her pills are not doing anything to help the quality of her life. For her to live like a vegetable like this for the next couple of years would be a travesty. And then several months later, we get an email back, and it says something like, you know, Aunt Martha is back.
She came back.
She came back.
She stopped taking her
drugs. Now, that's not to say medicine is bad. Obviously, drugs save lives.
We've got to talk some more about this, but I've got to take a break.
Sure.
We've got to take a break, and we'll come back, and we're going to talk more about the radio program. We're going to talk about this issue. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin, and my guests are Joe Graydon and Terry Graydon, and they've agreed to come tell us sort of the inside story of their radio broadcast, which is not all as it seems. We've been talking a little bit about how they integrate the pre-recorded portions with the live portions. And you know something, we got off topic and we can't leave it, because we were talking about the interrelationship between drugs and the quality of life, and when the side effects of the drugs so diminish the quality of life that you begin to say, I'll take the medical risk associated with getting off the drugs. And you all have wrestled with this a lot.
This is sort of the central issue that we wrestle with all of the time, because obviously we can't give people medical advice. We're not physicians. It is a decision that needs to be made between the patient and the doctor, or the family and the physician. But I think it's important for doctors to not just look at numbers. I mean, it's very easy to see a 80-year-old woman with a cholesterol of 240 and say, well, she should be on Lipitor. But then if side effects occur, I think it's really important for the physician to recognize that her ability to communicate, her ability to perambulate, her ability to interact with the people around her is at least as important, if not more so, than her cholesterol numbers.
So if she's not able to get out to her bridge club, or you know, to keep up her golf game, those are things that are good for her health, regardless of her cholesterol. There's not a lot of data that suggests that lowering cholesterol in an otherwise healthy 80-year-old woman is going to extend her life significantly. And you know, some people do very well on these cholesterol-lowering drugs, and certainly people who have had heart attacks may need them, but people who haven't already had heart attacks really should talk to their doctors if they have side effects from the medication.
So really what the People's Pharmacy is all about, whether it's books, whether it's the newspaper column, or whether it's the radio, is trying to give people the information that they need in order to make informed decisions and have that kind of open dialogue with their physician. And I think there are more and more doctors who are interested in having that kind of a dialogue.
Well, let's get back to the radio program, the ins and outs of it. And one of the things I think that excites us here in Chapel Hill about the People's Pharmacy is its enormous success and popularity throughout the country. And so part of it, of course, and maybe the essential part of it, is making a good radio program that has lots of driveway moments. Driveway moments are like, when, if you're a listener, like when you drive into your driveway and you get home and you stay in the car for a minute or two to hear the rest of the story. But there's another part of it, and that is that you've got program directors at public radio stations all across the country who are making decisions about what programs to run. Some of them may not know who you are. You know, they may not listen to your program. They may not think it's any good because they're not interested in this right now. And but their listeners, of course, want to hear it, and you want their listeners to hear it. How much of your time is spent sort of doing public relations with your customers? your
not enough.
Not nearly enough. There are a lot of program directors out there in public radio land that haven't yet seen the light.
Well, what do you do? Part of it must be referral within the community of program directors.
Program directors are tough nuts to crack. I mean, these are folks who have heard it all, seen it all. You know, everybody has what they think is a great radio show just waiting to emerge. It's like, you know, oh, we have the next Car Talk. We have the next Terry Gross, or I'm a great interviewer and I can do a wonderful job. So I think program directors develop a very thick skin, and it is very easy to say no.
And especially because if you're a program director, it's a little bit like running the comics page in the local newspaper. If you want to put a new comic strip in, you've only got so much space. You're going to have to take one of the old ones out. And if you take out something that your readers really love, you're going to hear about it. So it's hard to make changes in something like that.
Let me just ask you this. We started out the program talking about your new book, Favorite Home Remedies, from the People's Pharmacy, and you mentioned that this was driven in part by the fundraising responsibilities that you mm-hmm. have as a part of the team to help raise money, in this case, for the local public radio station. So that if you're able to raise money for the station, boy, you're going to stay on, I guess. You're going to be continue to be a part if you can contribute to that. If your audience contributes by giving when you're raising money, that's got to help.
Well, I'm sure that program directors pay attention to that. I'm also sure it's not the only thing that matters to them.
No, I mean, public radio has very high standards. And so the only thing that really matters to a program director is how good does it sound. But let's also be very honest. In today's economic climate, public radio has a real challenge because it's kind of a unique business model. I mean, this is something that you give away for free. You know, you don't have to pay for it if you don't have the money or just choose not to. You can just turn on your radio and you get it. Now, there are very few other services out there where you could get it for free, and it's purely voluntary whether or not you're going to actually choose to send in your check. There are underwriters in advertising, but as you probably know, in commercial radio and commercial television these days, advertising is starting to dry up. It's harder and harder to get underwriters. So we're very fortunate in this area to have one of the strongest public radio stations in the country in terms of its ability to raise money. I mean, there is no question that we are one of the diamonds in the public radio crown. But a lot of stations are hurting, and so raising money is part of the process.
Talking about the economics of it, and I think that that interests me, and I'm sure interests people who are listening in the sense that, you know, it is free. You can make voluntary contributions if you want mm-hmm. to public radio. And from your standpoint, you produce the program in partnership with your underwriters, with the people who underwrite the program and the station. So the economics of it are driven by those relationships. What difference does it make to you whether or not a station in you get an extra station in California or you get an audience in New York City?
Well, you know, money has never driven what we do, DG. We have always been committed to.
I wasn't accusing you.
No,
of it, but I just wanted to say it works.
You can't do it for the money, because if you do,
can't do it for free either.
You can't sustain it.
How do you get compensated?
We get compensated through our underwriters. I mean, primarily, and the local NPR affiliate, our host station, also contributes something.
That is North Carolina Public Radio.
And so it's between the underwriters and our host station that keeps us on the air. But what we're really about is communicating information that we think is valuable. You know, how do we choose our guests, for example? Well, if we're passionate about something, if we care, then we hope that we'll bring our passion to the listeners and they'll care as well. And so if we care, then we want listeners to be able to hear us on an Indian reservation in the Midwest, on a small station in Alaska. Sure, we love being heard on KERA in Dallas-Fort Worth or Wisconsin Public Radio or South Carolina Public Radio over, you know, Virginia. But we value that little tiny station with maybe, you know, 120 listeners on a Saturday morning just as much as we appreciate the thousands in Dallas.
Joe and Terry Graydon are my guests, and we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is DG Martin. My guests are Joe and Terry Graydon. I got them here to share with us some of their secrets about how they put together such a fine radio broadcast on public radio. And they've told me some of their secrets, but not all of them. I think that what I want to know is, how do you all find such good stories to go on your radio program? And what are the rules that you have for what is a good story?
Well, first of all, the guest has to be fabulous. Now, you know, we've had our share of stinkers, let's be honest. I mean, you don't do something for as long as we have and not make mistakes. But we talk to every guest before we put them on the air, you know, usually a month or two ahead of time, just to get a sense of, you know, do they share their passion with us and with our listeners? Is it a topic that's of broad general interest? Sometimes it'll be a controversial issue. Sometimes it'll be what we call a touchy-feely issue. In other words, it'll try and reach you at a, not just at the level of your intellect, but at the level of your heart. When it comes to our callers, we want people who are energetic, who are interesting, who have something powerful to share with our listeners. I mean, if it's not going to be interesting to us, then we don't...
How do you tell somebody, well, I liked your story, but we might get back... Do you just never say no, but we might get back with you later? Or well, you say, well, this is wonderful for us, but it's probably not going to fit. How do you deliver the message that you're not going to make it?
Actually, we don't have to do that. Luckily, that's the responsibility of the person who's screening the calls. And
our producer as well.
Yeah. And consequently, I think very often people are told, well, we've already covered that topic in this show, or it's not appropriate for this show. We're not talking about that this at this point in time. It's kind of hard to say to somebody, well, it's sort of an interesting story, but you can't enough to put it across. But that is definitely a consideration. Someone who speaks very slowly or haltingly is not going to make for compelling radio listening. And we really need to pay attention to how well we're serving the listener.
Yeah, it's all about the listener. And I think, you know, when I started out in this business a very long time ago, I was not a very good listener. It took me a long time to figure out it wasn't about me. It was truly about the listener. And what does the listener care about? What does the listener want to hear? And if we're not serving the listener, then it shouldn't be on the air.
Do you guys make those judgments yourselves, or do you have a coach? Do you have somebody who's your friendly critic who will say, hey, on that one that you picked out, you might have gotten interested in this, but the listener didn't care. Do you have anybody?
Our son has great ears. And so Dave often will say, you know, because he does the sound editing for us. And he'll say, you know, you guys might have thought that was a great interview, but let me tell you, that was a stinker. And we'll have to go back and think. In fact, we have one right now with what I thought was a fantastic researcher from New Zealand. We did it live to tape from New Zealand, from Wellington. And, you know, I was just spellbound. And our son goes, Dad, this is just not working.
Actually a story only a pharmacologist could love. Or perhaps an epidemiologist. So there is a select handful of people who would be fascinated by this story.
So our son has good ears. Our producer has good ears. And so there are a lot of... levels that will interfere with our ability to put everything that we think is cool on the air.
Well, Joe, tell us the producer we keep talking a little bit about. Tell us about your producer and how you
developed this relationship. Well, Lynn Siegel has really grown into this job over the last several years. And so she will often bring us ideas and say, you know, I've got this wonderful book, and we'll look at it and we'll go, yeah, this is terrific, not quite right for us. Or she'll find a guest that will help resolve a particular question that has been burning into our heads. We have a guest right now that I think is fantastic, but, you know, will it work or not? I don't know. I read about it in Sigma Psi, which is a science journal for scientists from Germany, a fellow who had written about something called Coley's toxin, a different way of treating cancer many, many decades ago. And so I was just intrigued because I've been looking at this for decades myself. Now, will he be able to talk? Will he have a thick accent? Will we be able to find a place to put him on the air? That's all going to be up to our producer, Lynn Siegel.
And is anyone besides Joe actually interested in the history of medicine?
I think this one is going to be a winner if he can talk. But
all
that's
right.
A big if.
Well, listen, tune in to the Graydons on WUNC, our public radio partner. And thanks for sharing with us the inside story of your program. For those of you who'd like to learn more about the Graydon's new book, Favorite Home Remedies, or about anything else with that has to do with their program, with prescription medicines and with healing and good health, go to People's Pharmacy, oneword.com. Joe and Terry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, DG.
Thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.